Welcome to iPharmRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iPharmRx, and as many of our listeners know, trazodone is commonly prescribed for insomnia, particularly to older adults, in the belief that it is somehow safer than benzodiazepines and cheaper than most other sedative hypnotics and melatonin receptor agonists that are available on the market today. Well, certainly generic trazodone is cheaper than Remeltion, but is it really safer to use than benzodiazepines? Well, a recently published study in JAGS, or the Journal of the American Geriatric Society, explicitly examined the risk of falls in nursing homes in patients who were prescribed low-dose trazodone or a benzodiazepine for sleep. And joining me today to talk about this study are Dr. Anthony Todd and Dr. Nicole Slater. Dr. Todd is an ambulatory care academia pharmacy practice fellow, and Dr. Slater is a member of the Auburn University School of Pharmacy faculty and is based on their Mobile, Alabama campus. Anthony and Nicole practice at the University of South Alabama Department of Family Medicine, Family Medicine Clinic, and together they wrote a commentary for iPharmRx entitled "Fall Risk and Benzos, Is Trazodone Really the Knight in Shining Armor?" Anthony and Nicole, it's great to have you both here today for the iPharmRx podcast.
Well, thank you for having me, Stuart. I'm really excited for this opportunity.
Thank you, Stuart. This is going to be a great discussion on the article.
So before we get started, Nicole, I'd like to start with a patient case and ask you a few questions. I want you to imagine you're seeing MB, an 83-year-old African-American female, in the family medicine clinic today for a comprehensive medication review. The patient has a history of high blood pressure and osteoarthritis, and she states that she's tired most of the time and hasn't been sleeping well lately. She's been using Unisom, which she purchases over the counter, for the past few months. And while it seemed to help at first, it hasn't really been working lately. In addition to Unisom, she currently takes lisinopril hydrochlorothiazide 20/12.5 milligrams daily, nebumetone 500 milligrams twice daily, and omeprazole 20 milligrams daily, as well as a number of herbal products: Dong Quai, cocoa powder, turmeric, and ginger. She currently weighs 123 pounds and her BMI is 21.1. And her blood pressure looks pretty good today. It's 126 over 58. Her husband of 52 years died 2 years ago. So she currently lives alone in a single family home. She states she has no difficulty managing the house by herself and makes her own meals, does the laundry, and still tends to a small vegetable garden. She has 3 grown children, 5 grandchildren, and 1 great-grandchild. So most of her children live close by, and they visit and call regularly. So before we talk about the study published in JAGS, can you tell me a little bit about some of the things that might be going on in your mind in this case? What additional information might you want to collect and assess during the encounter? And what treatment options, including non-pharmacological options, would you be considering at this point for this patient, MB?
All right. Well, I think some of my thoughts initially are that she seems to be a potential fall risk just due to her age alone. Also, her blood pressure was good today, but, you know, she could potentially be having some low blood pressure, so we would certainly want to collect more information on that. And also her use of the Unisom, so we know that that medication could be potentially harmful in the elderly patients, and I would want to gather some more information related to how she was taking that and how long she's been taking that. The other thing I'm thinking about are the herbal supplements that she's taking. And so a lot of our patients tend to take herbal supplements for different reasons. But noticing that some of the medications that she's taking could be a potential bleed risk due to drug interactions with some of the medications she's taking, such as nebumetone. Some questions that I might consider asking her is how often she's using the Unisom, and if she's tried anything else for sleep or to help her with her sleep. I would also ask her if there's anything that tends to inhibit her ability to fall asleep. So a discussion on lifestyle, and particularly because she just lost her husband. And then I would also ask questions about how long she stays asleep to assess her ability of staying asleep versus falling asleep, because we know that there are different medications and different things that we could utilize depending on the issue that the patient's having. Additionally, I would ask her if she's had any falls recently or if there's anything in the home that could contribute to a fall since she is older and has that bleed risk. And then I might ask her some questions related to her herbal supplements to see if she even knows why she's taking them and how long she's been taking them. As far as a non-pharmacological option, I think whenever someone is suffering from insomnia or sleep issues, my go-to questions are surrounding sleep hygiene. We might be able to change lifestyle versus going to a medication treatment at this time.
So, Anthony, let's talk about the study you analyzed for your iFormerX commentary. The study, which is entitled Low-Dose Trazodone, Benzodiazepines, and Fall-Related Injury in Nursing Homes, a Match Cohort Study. And it was published in the Journal of the American Geriatric Society, or JAGS, in October of 2018. We provide a link to that paper on the iFormerX website, but for those in our audience who haven't actually read the paper, can you give us a brief summary of the study design and its major findings?
So, yeah, just like the title states, this was a retrospective matched cohort study that looked at the rates of falls requiring emergency department visits or acute hospitalizations between nursing home residents in Ontario, Canada, that were prescribed either low-dose trazodone or benzodiazepines. The study actually found no statistical difference in the rates of this outcome between the two groups.
So we don't frequently talk about observational studies in iFormerX, and many in our audience may be wondering what a matched cohort study is and how that's different than a case control study. What's the difference between these two study designs, and why would investigators elect to use either of these observational study designs versus doing a randomized prospective trial?
So with the case control study design, really the researchers are looking retrospectively just to compare patients who have fallen versus those who have not fallen, and then if determine if there are rates in the usages of either medications, so either trazodone or benzodiazepines. However, in this match cohort design, the researchers actually already know medications the patients were on, and so to separate them between the usage of trazodone or benzodiazepines, retrospectively assess if there's a difference in the fall risk. And so using a retrospective design, it's much faster, much easier to get data, and cheaper to complete than a randomized prospective control trial. You know, if you wanted to try to do the same study prospectively in these populations, it'd be pretty difficult and take a lot of time and money.
So, Anthony, I think everyone understands that observational studies really can't be used to determine cause and effect relationships, and they're prone to bias and other confounders. What are the potential confounders in this study, and what, if anything, did the investigators do to mitigate them?
You're exactly right, Stuart. So, with observational studies, you can't determine cause and effect. Since this was a retrospective study, there is the possibility that some data or information was just lacking from the patient's charts. So, you know, the medical records may not be updated appropriately. The necessary information just may not be there. So particularly for this study, there could have been information lacking about the indication for the use of each drug. They just looked to see were patients exposed to trazodone versus those exposed to benzodiazepines, but there is no clear indication for why they are actually on those. Other confounders could be that while the researchers, they did try to identify other medications that the patients were on, they didn't report what those medications were. So we're not able to really determine whether or not these falls or these emergency room visits or anything that the patients had in the past were strictly due to the trazodone or benzodiazepines or any other medication. The falls could have been due to either trazodone or benzodiazepines or to just some other mitigating factor that wasn't identified in the chart. The trial also could have underestimated the true incidence of falls themselves and the fall-related injuries because not every fall is going to require a hospitalization. So we're not getting a true assessment of how often patients could truly be falling.
So, Nicole, I'm wondering if these results really should change practice. We know that trazodone is widely prescribed to treat insomnia in older adults, and not just in nursing homes, but in community-dwelling seniors as well. Is this evidence sufficiently compelling that we really should be rethinking this practice? And most importantly, back to our patient case, and B, should she be warned about the risk of falls from sedative hypnotic use? And what, if any, medications do you feel would be safe for her to use?
So that's a really good question, Stuart. And I think while our practice here, we don't really recommend or utilize trazodone or benzodiazepines for sleep, I think the results of this study should really alert other practitioners who may prescribe trazodone over benzodiazepines to show that trazodone really is no safer than benzodiazepines. If we look at MB, she isn't really a nursing home resident, so we can't truly apply these results to her or other ambulatory patients, but the results would not change our opinion of utilizing trazodone over a benzodiazepine. As part of our counseling as pharmacists, I think we should always be educating patients on the risk for CNS effects and fall risks with any of these medications or even some of the over-the-counter medications that patients select to use for insomnia. For MB, it would probably be best to use non-pharmacological options, talking about sleep hygiene, maybe even cognitive behavioral therapy, and then potentially suggest a natural remedy like melatonin, but counsel her on the risks associated with that as well. I think more compelling evidence and studies are necessary to really be able to adequately assess the safety of trazodone versus benzodiazepines. And until more data is available, both of these agents should be avoided in the elderly population for insomnia.
Well, Nicole, Anthony, I want to thank you both for joining me today to discuss the treatment of insomnia in older adults, which is a very common problem for which medications are commonly used, but perhaps should be used far more sparingly. I think it's clear from your comments that non-pharmacological options such as good sleep hygiene and cognitive behavioral therapy are far safer for older adults to use and perhaps more effective in the long run. Well, tell us what you think. Remember, only iFormRx members can leave comments and access our growing list of resource pages. Check out our new clinical trials and guideline page on mental health disorders and the opioid safety and overdose prevention resource page. If you're not a member of iFormRx already, you can join. It's free. Sign up today. And be sure to tell your colleagues, your residents, and students to join iFormRx as well. And until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.